Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children. And by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education today.
Welcome, welcome. I'm here with Nelson Edward Brown, and we're going to talk about his book called The Beauty in Us, Our Reality. And this is a really good topic for young men because we don't often talk about that. But first of all, Nelson, let's just talk about you. Let's talk about your childhood. Let's talk about where you are today and why you became interested in this topic. So let's begin at the beginning. First of all, tell us a little bit about your family.
I'd first like to say thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my story on this platform. And I've just been blessed with a lot of opportunities to share my story on many different platforms. I've been able to network with a lot of people that support me, my dream, and you know what I want to accomplish and the difference that I'm trying to make, you know, not just within this community, but worldwide. So I just want to start off by saying thank you. But I would also like to add that I am a student at the Community College of Baltimore County in Catonsville, Maryland. I study environmental science. In addition to that, I work part-time at the Maryland Department of the Environment under the Lead Poisoning Prevention Program in the Land and Materials Administration. I am the secretary of the Project Spark Success Team at CCBC and a member of the editorial board for the literary magazine. And I'm also an evangelist at the Messiah Community Church in Reisterstown, Maryland, under Pastor Rod Harrison and First Lady Sherry. Well, growing up, I was always considered to be one of the heavier students in the class. I always stood out because of my size, but the book really talks about how I struggled with my self-image growing up from an early age. It talks about my struggles with my self-image during different periods of my life. The book starts at me in kindergarten and at the age of 5 years old, and it ends at my graduation from high school at the age of 18. And throughout the book, you'd see how I navigate between, you know, different moments where I felt confident and moments that I didn't feel confident about myself. It talks about relationships I had to juggle. And it just talks about the positive and negative influences that contributed to my poor self-image growing up and how I managed to conquer that at the very end. But this is not just one book. This is a book series. The Beauty in Us is the title of the book series.
Okay.
It's about a male's perspective on body positivity and self-acceptance, which is not discussed in the media at all. And I decided to establish this book series because I don't see any males in the media openly talking about their struggles with their self-image at all. And having this book series and just doing my work, establishing my own ministry, my own book series, and just my own movement, it definitely gives me an opportunity to, share my story. And a lot of men and a lot of boys have a very difficult time with, you know, being vulnerable. And this is just a way that I break that barrier. And this is just a way for me to just share with them, you know, stuff that's not spoken in the public, you know, often at all, you know, and I'm just showing, you know, men and boys that it's okay to uncover your weaknesses. It's okay to, you know, embrace your flaws, the insecurities that you may have, and it's okay to just be who you are.
That's such a fantastic topic because young men, adolescents particularly, have that where there's a natural dip in our feelings of self-worth. I mean, we're growing and we're not quite sure where we fit in society. And that's when we become very vulnerable to aberrant behaviors and addictive behaviors. So as a young person growing up, did you have any temptations in those areas?
Well, I definitely feel as though because of my status, you know, being a young male in society today, It definitely, I felt like, you know, from outsiders, you know, especially my educators and my peers, a lot of people, you know, labeled me in a sense, and a lot of people, and this is what self-image is all about. It's not always about looks. You think about the way people treat you. You think about the flaws that are pointed out to you from others about you, and you have the tendency to believe that a lot of things are ugly, but it becomes an insecurity when you begin to internalize that, and when you begin to think about it to the point where, you know, it becomes something that, you know, you don't feel comfortable about. And I just honestly feel like, you know, as a young Black male, I definitely feel like, you know, the world, you know, perceives me as one thing, or, you know, guys like me or guys of my background as one thing, when, you know, in reality, a lot of times TV brainwashes people, and it has them, you know, tied to these stereotypes, and this is what they expect from someone of that background, and this is what they expect. These are the personality traits and characteristics that they expect from men and women of the same background. And I feel like, you know, my class of people, my gender, and just, you know, millennials of my background, men of my background, in my position, I just feel like we're the most underestimated and the most overshadowed and most disrespected in all of the groups combined. Because growing up, I always feel like I had to, you know, overcompensate in school with my grades, with academics, because I felt very insecure about my physical appearance, and I always wanted to validate myself through my academics, and I always felt as though I needed to, you know, prove myself to others, and I always felt as though I needed to seek the approval of others, and there was a part of me that always wanted to please my mom. I grew up with a single mom for the majority of my life since I was about 5 years old, and I was always afraid of disappointing her. And that's when I became a perfectionist, especially in middle school. And in middle school and earlier on in high school, you know, my self-image really took its toll on me. And I had a very difficult time, you know, establishing healthy relationships with others. I had a very difficult time as it pertains to, you know, getting involved in clubs and activities and doing things that, you know, kids do, you know, and I didn't really give myself an opportunity to enjoy being a teenager, you know, when I was about 13 or 14. But gradually, as I began to adapt to a healthier and happier lifestyle through dieting and exercising, in addition to finding healthier coping mechanisms to deal with stress, to deal with adversity, you know, it turned around in my favor. And that's what the book is about.
Yeah, you are an exceptional young man to have already authored a book at a very young age. I know you're soon going to be 20, but we can say that while in your teens, you authored a book on a topic that touches at the very core of human beings. And I believe that from the time we're conceived, there is an evil force seeking to destroy us by telling us we are worthless, by making us feel worthless, to the extent that some people don't even make it, you know, out of the birth canal because they're destroyed there. So when you talk about this very fundamental core value of who you are hitting on an issue that is huge. So let's first unpack perfectionism. What is so bad about being a perfectionist?
Well, being a perfectionist, I would say that it definitely, you put a lot of unreasonable and unnecessary amount of pressure on yourself to perform well. And it leads to depression and anxiety and stress. But a lot of times, and I don't think parents realize this, that, you know, it stems from childhood. You know, if you grew up in a household, or if you grew up with parents in a household that, you know, did not congratulate you on any of your accomplishments, or if you grew up in a household where, you know, people didn't hug, people didn't, you know, say I love you, people who didn't show you any type of affection, you're going to feel inadequate, you know, as you grow up. Or, you know, if you had that parent that was very strict, or if you had that parent that was not satisfied with your progress in school unless it was, you know, pitch perfect, unless everything was A+. Those are just, you know, examples of how a child can turn into a perfectionist, and how that, how what stems from your childhood transcends into adulthood. And it just becomes like, the older you become with the perfectionist spirit and with the perfectionist personality, the nastier it becomes, and the more it begins to fester, and you just never feel adequate, and you never feel like you're good enough. So I feel as though it stems from childhood. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it comes from not just your parents, but it could be your peers. It could be your educators or people who are supposed to motivate you.
Mm-hmm.
So it definitely stems from childhood early on. I feel as though it does.
Well, we have to take a break right here. But when we come back, I want to talk about another word I heard you say, which is internalized. So we'll be right back. Born infant doesn't have the ability to express their love for you, your spouse, siblings, or God. But that doesn't hinder you from loving that infant and having that special bond. God is not hindered either. As parents and caregivers, we partner with God in order for faith, trust, and love to develop in that infant. This relationship forms the foundation for later beliefs about God. For more information about Like a Little Child, the spiritual journey of infants and toddlers, go to educationcurrents.org.
And I just wanted to talk about what bothers me the most is when I'm walking down the hallway on my way to class or my locker and someone says, "Hey, shorty," or "Hey, little freshman." I know I'm short, but why does everyone have to point it out? In my opinion, short people rock. I mean, being tall isn't all that wonderful. They can't do a lot of things that short people can do. And the tall people can do things that short people can't do. We are all different sizes for a reason. I like the way I am. Don't try to change yourself because of other people. You rock the way you are.
This Kids Talk moment was brought to you by Baltimore White Marsh Adventist School. For more information, go to www.bwmschool.org. Welcome back. I'm talking with Nelson Brown, and you can check him out on a number of social media sites. He's in Twitter and Facebook, you name it. You can find him there. And you can also go and obtain his book at Amazon.com, either an ebook or a paperback. And the book he wrote is The Beauty in Us, Our Reality. It's actually a series. Now, what is the first book titled? What is the first book titled?
The first book is titled The Beauty in Us, Our Reality. That's volume one.
That's volume one. And do you know the title of the next volume?
Well, the next book that I'm currently working on is going to be volume two. It's going to be entitled The Beauty in Us, Vulnerable Masculinity.
Okay. And so I promised our listeners we'd talk about internalized. Anything that is internalized then takes on its own light. With inside of your mind, you know, it plays tricks on you. So how did you, or when did you realize that some of the things you were grappling with, you had internalized to the point where they were so much a part of you that you had really had to, with intention, replace them?
Well, I honestly believe that, like, when I think about the word internalize, I think about people who, and not just me, but just people in general, people who internalize pain, they internalize heartache or hurt, I just feel like a lot of people walk around with a false face, or, you know, they walk around with a mask, mm-hmm. especially men, because, like I said before, you know, a lot of men and a lot of boys have a very difficult time being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't want to ask for help. They don't want people to see them cry. Mm-hmm. And they definitely don't want to appear weak in the public in front of other men. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's just, I just feel like when you internalize, and I think it's worse when you internalize, you know, your hurt, your pain, your sorrow, your heartache. I think that, you know, and a lot of people don't like to seek help, but to share a secret with some of your listeners that may not have my background, it's a very taboo topic in the Black community to discuss mental health, depression, anxiety, fear. And a lot of people in our community, especially people from older generations, they have, you know, this what goes on in this house stays in this house mentality. Mm-hmm. In other words, you know, the things that happen, you know, you just have to get over it and move on. But what they've really been telling their children is that, you know, their pain doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what you mean when you just brush it under the rug, and it makes kids feel as though their parents don't care. That's the impression that they give.
Yeah.
It festers.
It internalized. Let's see if I can think of an example. I think, I'll take my example. So growing up, my dad always said girls weren't as smart as boys, and girls couldn't drive vehicles and boys could. And he told me I shouldn't go to college. I really wasn't college material. And that never became internalized. I've often thought about those things, and people around me have said, wow, you know. Well, I don't think it became internalized, but maybe there was something there to it. I don't know. But others then that have had similar experiences will say how devastated they were and how it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. They didn't go on to college then because one of their parents had said, you know, you're just not college material. So that's just kind of a superficial way of where one person internalizes it and it becomes the path on which they tread for the rest of their lives, where another person doesn't internalize it and they march to their own tune. They don't care what anybody said about them. So do you have any strategies to prevent these messages that society gives us from it becoming an internal thing where now everything that happens to you or that you do becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy almost because you've internalized these negative messages?
Well, I would definitely say that if you want to eliminate or eradicate any negative feelings that you internalize about yourself, or if it's from others, I would definitely say that, you know, you have four categories of people that you can have in your inner circle and that you can have on what I call your dream team. You have the first category of people, which are the people that like you for who you are, and they like your purpose, your dream, what you're trying to accomplish in your life in order to make others great. And then you have the second group of people that like you, but they're not into what you're trying to accomplish. They don't like your dream, not the dream that you have for yourself, and a dream that's going to impact lives, not just now, but for eternity. And then you have the third category of people that don't like you, but they like the fact that you're making your dream a reality. And they like the fact that, you know, you are making your passion your paycheck in a sense, or that they like the fact that, you know, you're doing something great. And some people are very, very thirsty for attention. They want to align with something that's great just because it's beneficial for them or just because it makes them look great. And then you have the fourth category of people that do not like you and that do not like your dream of what you're trying to accomplish. So those are the four categories of people that I've figured out, especially, you know, on this journey as an author, as activist, as a speaker, as an environmentalist, and just with everything that I do, I'm finding out about these people more and more. And with those four categories of people, I gathered that, you know, that, you know, that analogy, in a sense, or that, you know, just thought in my mind about, you know, the type of people that you can have on your team. And the fourth category of people that I mentioned, people who don't like you or your dream, you know, it would seem easy to eliminate those people, but, you know, you would be surprised of how many people who are people-pleasing people, people who want external validation, or if they want everybody to like them, you would be surprised of how many people they have on their team that belong in that fourth category. So you need to eliminate those people. And then the people that like you but don't like your dream, or that don't like your dream but like you, my dream is who I am, in a sense. Mm-hmm. My passion is, you know, my passion is a part of who I am. So if you can like me and not like what I'm trying to accomplish, we're going to have an issue. If you don't like me, and if you just like me because of my dream, or because you want to be tied to something great, or if you just want to be linked to something that makes you look great, I don't want you on my team either, because I feel like you're using me at that point. And you just want to be tied to my name because it benefits you. So that's why I separate categories 2 and 3. Like I said, your dream and your passions and, you know, who you are, they go hand in hand. And that's why I say that the first category of people, the people who like you for who you are, and people who like your dream and your purpose, and they understand what you're trying to accomplish to make this world and this community a better place, those are the only types of people you want on your team. People who are not envious of you or jealous of you because of your success. People who are building you up instead of tearing you down. And people who want to be a part of that dream because they enjoy your company, they enjoy what you bring to the table. And when you have friends or peers, you know, that are supportive of you and what you're trying to accomplish, you know, it's definitely fulfilling for everybody, and nobody feels intimidated by anybody. But if you have people in your circle that are constantly questioning you, your dreams, and who you are and what you're trying to accomplish, or if they are jealous of you or envious of you because of all of your successes, then you need to eliminate those people, and you need to get rid of those people because they're not serving you well.
So taking that, I mean, that's profound information, and I know we only have a few minutes of the show left, but taking that, what advice would you give to a 13-year-old boy who is maybe suffering from things that are happening at school or at home?
I would definitely say to that 13-year-old boy, you definitely want to seek help. Seek professional help. Talk to somebody you trust. It could be a friend, it could be a teacher, it could be a counselor, or it could be a parent. Talk to someone you trust. And in my book, and your listeners and your people who follow you, if they buy my book, they'll read this. I went to seek professional help earlier on in high school, and it helped do a complete turnaround for me, and I felt a lot better, you know, once I did seek professional help, and once I was able to get what I needed to get off my chest. So I definitely think that, you know, that 13-year-old boy, if they're suffering from anything, talk to somebody you trust. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with asking for help. There's nothing wrong with, you know, addressing your concerns, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to grow and wanting to be a better person.
Yes.
And you know, your story and your situation can be a blessing to others.
Yes.
And how can you reach people if you've never gone through anything?
Yes, and we have to end the show. Thank you so much. I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Education Current, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to MRGMediaMinistries.com. That's all one word. MRGMediaMinistries.com.